Good evening. I bring you greetings from the desert. How did it go last week? What did you decide?
Here's your list.
Oh my goodness.
And then I just did it. We talked about this.
Heart Sutra, Bodhisattva Vows, Paramitas, Genjo Koan, Sando Kai. They're all here. Donna Lynn, that's beautiful. It's treasure. Everything on here is treasure. And any one of them would simply be nourishment for all of us. So it really doesn't matter what we choose in a way. I've just done the paramitas twice in a row. I did them at Chikoji, and then I did them again at Hokoji this last week. And then I did them again last night in Albuquerque, so maybe we could skip that one for a little while.
Actually, a lot of people expressed interest in the Diamond Sutra, and because it was new, something I hadn't discussed before.
Mm-hmm.
And correct me if my memory is not serving me. And of course, the Genjo Koan was of interest, and I mentioned the new book by Akuma.
Yes.
And then I think also the Kokyo Lumiere. Sutra was also, I think, had a, and I think a couple of people were also interested in Juno Mir. So I think they were leaning towards, kind of like you are, maybe discussing something that we haven't done. And I don't think anybody held signs up or wanted any particular thing else. We all felt they were, as you said,
great family. Kind of. It was pretty much on the back, everything on the back half of the page plus the Genjo.
There you go. Genjo there you go.
Everything back here plus Genjo here.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, everything on the front. Yeah,
needs to. You can really take a vote. I think at least one person wanted everything.
Is that right?
But maybe two people. One, but it wasn't, you know.
Yes.
Here.
Well, what do you think? Shall we read through and have hands up to see how many want which? We could sort of boil it down that way. Or you all could just speak up and speak for something and persuade us that it's the thing.
Yeah.
Shall we do that? Russ?
Donnellyn, you said something last time. There was one piece on there that you felt that Angie would get particularly joy out of. I don't know which one it was.
So it was building them up that you were enjoying Akamura's book.
Oh.
Yes. And many senior Hogan students had felt that it was expressed in a way that he expressed it.
Yes. Yes, it's true.
I kind of were building them after that.
I see.
Shows.
That was really good.
Yeah.
Well. Yes.
I'd like to say that usually it's fun to have long discussions about something. I've never found that groups of more than three people could ever agree on anything completely.
If that. Yes.
So I would express my preference for the Andrew Paul.
Okay.
Andrew Paul.
Good.
I am personally very interested in the Dharma Sutra because that's the one thing that I've studied most often on my own, but never with a teacher or anybody who had studied it formally.
Okay, Genjo Diamond.
Another question. Since we have those two interesting things, I'm wondering what's the difference between, I mean, I kind of know, but maybe that would help us decide, a koan and a sutra. We've done sutras, but I don't remember doing a koan.
It's not really a koan.
Oh, it's not.
It's called the Genjo Koan, using an old meaning of koan as a kind of presentation of something. So it's about 3 or 4 pages of discussion of Buddha nature. And it ends with a koan, a 4-line koan, finishes up the exposition that he gives. But it's about Buddha nature and about the self. Genjo means every day. And in Soto Zen, our only koan, really, is the everyday life koan. So that's what it's about. We don't have to have a story that we puzzle about. We live it. And always something comes up. So it's about that.
And the Diamond Sutra?
And the Diamond Sutra is like the Prajnaparamita Sutra. It's in the same tradition. And so its expression is definitely not an exposition. It's a conversation between Buddha and one of his bodhisattvas, in which the bodhisattva keeps trying to understand what Buddha-ness means. And he gets it in one way and then turns it another way, and Buddha says, no, no, not like that. And then turns, and it goes through as if different facets of a diamond were shining. That's one of the images, and the other with the diamond is that it's so hard that it can cut anything. So it's the sort of the gritty essence of our understanding of life, practice, being. It's more like the Heart Sutra than anything else that we've studied. It is shorter. I've done it in one day, but I would not recommend that. I'd never do that again. But it can be fairly short. Yeah, that's it. We could do that. Genjo first, Diamond second. And then we could go on. We don't have to stop there. And this is a tiny list, actually. There's so much more that we could do as well, as you all know. Well, is that okay? Objections? All right. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self and be enlightened by all things. This is the same as saving all sentient beings. This is probably one of the most famous things that Dogen ever said. And so we're very fortunate to have it still. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by all things. So there's Shobo Genzo has Genjo Koan usually in it. I think the Zen Center book does, doesn't it? Kaz Tanahashi's. Moon in a Dewdrop, yes. It's not officially a part of Shobo Genzo. It's one of the earliest things that Dogen wrote. And he wrote it. I'll have to look it up. But it's usually included in Shobo Genzo at the very beginning of the collections. And Okamura Sensei has published a wonderful book called Realizing Genjo Koan. And it's very clear discussion and a very thorough and very easy to read. I've really been appreciating it a lot. So that will be probably your best bet if you want to go into it more deeply. The Diamond Sutra, there are a number of books that have been written about it and commentaries on it. It's very, very ancient, much older than the Genjo Koan. And Red Pines is the most accessible. It's written in the way that he's done all of his studies, the one on the Heart Sutra and the one on Huineng, where he takes a passage, a short passage, and then explicates it. He defines the terms in just that passage and explicates somewhat from an historical point of view what's being trying to be expressed. So it's not just a piece of material lying on the page. It's very vital and very creative kind of exposition of the material, so that you get background as you go, which is also always very, very helpful in this. Huineng wrote a commentary on the Diamond Sutra, and there are several translations of that, which is also extremely interesting and very, very helpful. There are a number of other studies of the Diamond Sutra, and you can look them up. We're so lucky now, and we can just Google everything and see what's out there. There's a juicy bunch of stuff out there. So do a little spelunking and see what you can find. And I'll do the same. And I'll start next week by bringing in Okamura's book and whatever I dream up to think and say about it, and to start us off. I'll figure out this week how to do this. And if you all have some ideas about it, please let me know, and we can work it all up together.
At Hokoji, the only time that I went to Hokoji, Lori asked you to talk about the Genji Koan.
No, I remember the mountains and rivers at Hokoji, but not the Genjo.
I hate it, actually. So You might have to
rewrite
your memory.
I guess so.
Because the way that you had it laid out, it was, I think it was six or seven sessions.
Yes.
And it flowed really, I thought it flowed really nice. So
good, that's good to know.
So you might have notes.
I might very well. Of course, I might not too, so. And often I don't use my notes because
yes.
I like to do it all over again. It's funny, but that's how it works. Oh, thank you.
Six or seven? Akamara's book is less than $12, and I'd be glad to order it for anybody who is interested in it. I could have copies here by next Tuesday or in a couple of days if anybody's interested to come see me. I can either have it shipped right to you or I can bring it next Tuesday. So I'd be glad to do that. And you can pay me.
Dalai Lama is coming next week, is it, or is it the week after? Is it next week?
12th and 13th. So 12th at the convention center on the 13th at San Jose.
Yes, yes. Yeah, thank you, Sally. I'll be at the one on the 12th, but I'll be back here in time for Michael and I are going to go together. We've been invited to sit on the stage with the Dalai Lama, so
really?
Yes. So how could we refuse?
Did you tell him you had a whole bunch of kids?
I think you can come. It's at the convention center in San Jose. I brought that flyer once, didn't I? Is it sold out? Oh, I'm not surprised, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
There's still tickets for the 13th at the event center at San Jose State.
Where do you find those?
You can buy them at the ticket office at San Jose State, at the event center ticket office on campus. And if you go there, there's no service charge.
Yeah. Well, is there online? Are they still online?
You can probably do that too. Just don't go through the scalpers that will charge you $200.
Yeah, I didn't know about that when we were just thinking about convention center and staying for.
How much are the tickets?
For the San Jose State, I think they're $35.
Yeah.
And at Stanford there's 60 or 80, and there's still a few left. In the Maples Pavilion on the
14th. So you'll be having this door up all around you.
Oh, yes, of course. I've seen him a number of times, so it's I feel like he's sort of part of my family because I ran into him the first time. I didn't expect to see him at all and had really very little knowledge about him when I ran into him. I was at Haiku Zendo, and the very first year that I was there was the Tibetan diaspora, and somebody in the group started to set up a program of creating support for the people who made it to India. and she brought a whole sheaf of photographs on, and you could choose from all these little pictures, little kids, old people, everybody, men and women, Tibetan refugees who needed some kind of support. And so I chose a tiny little shriveled up old lady whose name was Ani, Ani Samten. Well, Ani is honorific, actually. It means holy lady, actually, Ani Samten. And I began sending her, not very much, maybe $20 a month, just very little, and got letters back from her. And so we had this correspondence that went on for quite a while. And then my husband got interested in a project as an engineer of creating a bicycle pump that could get water out of a well using a bicycle for energy. And he was invited to India to go to Bihar and present this to the people in the villages. And he begged me to come with him. And I said, oh, I don't want to go to India. I'm fine. You know, I've got Chikoji. I have all these things to do. And he said, no, come, come. So I went to India and I said, if I go, I have to go and see Ani Samten. And he said, oh, you know, that's a scam. Somebody's taking those $20. You know they are, and they're just, you know, buying booze or something. I said, no, it's this little old lady. She's a nun. And so I wrote and said we were coming. And the next letter I got was from the young girl who had actually been the one who took to write down what Ani Samten said. And she said, oh, please come. And told me where we should stay, close to the temple where they were. And so we went. And it's beautiful. It's just in the foothills of the Himalayas. You can see them back up in the clouds, way up there in the clouds as you sit in this town. And the Gompa was up on a hill outside of town a little bit. And Ani Samten's little hut, and it was a very little hut. She crawled inside. It was dark and a tiny little stove, and it was right next to the cow byre, and she took care of the cow. And she was a saint. People came from all over to meet with her and drink tea. And she said very little, but had a tremendous, joyous presence, just a big happiness. When we got there, she didn't know who we were, so she just made us tea, and we sat in her aura and enjoyed it. And then all of a sudden, she looked at us again, and she, oh, she said, she knew who we were, and then she was so surprised. So then Tinley, the young girl who had been writing the letters, said, you know, Dalai Lama's in town. Would you like to come? And I said, oh. So in this town, there are many Tibetan people living now. And up in the mountains, all around, there are whole, different ethnic groups, but all Tibetan kinds of people. With different costumes, very much embroidery and long braids with yarn in it, babies on their backs. They all came flooding into this little town and to the town square. And Dalai Lama sat at one end of the town square, and everybody sat down on the ground. Lots of monks, lots of nuns, all wrapped up in their orange vestments. And some of us, white folks, English-speaking, most of us, and they translated for us. And young monks passed tea around all through the crowds. babies were nursing and little kids were running around, and Dalai Lama talked about the paramitas. One a day. Generosity one day, and the precepts another day, and etc., etc. It was incredible. I just couldn't believe that I'd come to that place.
Was your husband with you?
No, he just took off and took a walk. It lasted about, I don't know, 3 hours, I think, every day. So he just took a walk up the river and around the village. There was an old part of the village that he really enjoyed, beautiful carvings on the buildings. And then he'd come back and fetch me, and we would play with the children in the garden. It was a wonderful visit. I feel very fortunate to have met Ani Somten and to have had that connection. And the translator became a friend. She actually hadn't, at that point, she was still a young girl. I guess she was 20. And she finished her schooling and didn't know what to do, and went to Dalai Lama in Dharamsala and said, "Please, Your Holiness, I don't know what to do with my life." She said, "I know English. My father was a famous Tibetan Lama. There's nothing for me to do at the family temple because I have three brothers. And I need to do something important. I feel that I have something to give." And he said, "Be a bridge. Be a bridge between the cultures." He said, "The West needs what we know." So she got in a taxi, and somebody asked if they could share her taxi, and she said yes. And a woman got in, and she, Tinley, my friend, just poured out her problem to this woman, who said, "Oh, that's very interesting. A bridge between the East and the West." "Yes," she said, "I could sponsor you. You could come to America. You could come to California. You could go to the California Institute for Integral Studies and get a master's degree there. And that could help you very much in doing the kind of work that you would like to do." So Joanna Macy was her mentor and support for all the years that she was here. It was just one of those marvels. So by that time, she and I were friends, and so when she was here for the couple of years that she was here living in Berkeley, I was back and forth and with her a lot and learned much from her. She was absolutely delightful. Powerful woman. I just got an email from her. She had been up in the mountains in Ladakh, which is part of Kashmir, up in the highest, uppest part of Kashmir, closest to Tibet. And she'd taken a group of Americans up there to visit with some people that she knew who lived up there and some nuns that she was working with. And that huge rain came. And they tried to get back to the city of Leh. And she said she was on the worst roads that she'd ever been on. And I can't even imagine that, because I've been up there with her, and those roads are so terrible that you can't even look. It's so scary. And if she was scared, it must have been unbelievable. It took them days through the mud in the precipices to get back. And they found that the city of Leh, it had just washed down right through the middle of the city. She sent a picture of it. And houses with the families in them just washed down into the river. It was a terrible disaster there also. But she wrote about it very, very gutsy way, you know, this is what happened, and it was an amazing trip, and we slept in the cars, and it was very cozy, she said, and we made it out, and nobody died. She always gave a kind of trusting attitude to whatever happened. Not just, oh, it's okay, but a very vital way of facing and living whatever it is. Some kind of basic confidence. She came here once, didn't she?
Yes, I did.
Yes, she did. Yeah. Very pretty woman. So many things. Well, it's 8 o'clock.